My name is Fred Allen. I'm with the Department of Plant Sciences, University of Tennessee. And I want to start off to acknowledge two of my colleagues in this presentation, Virginia Sykes, who's a PhD graduate student in my program, and Richard Johnson, who is a research associate in my program. An outline of what I'll be talking about this afternoon is I'll briefly overview what we mean by an idiotype breeding concept. Brief overview on switchgrass. You've probably heard enough on switchgrass that you're ad nauseum now, but I'll give you a little bit more information. I'll talk about the polycross nursery, how that was set up, the F1 half-sib families, show you a few results, and then a summary on that. Idiotype breeding concept really introduced back in the 60s. C.M. Donnell, 1968 publication in Euphytica, the breeding of crop idiotypes, and since that time there's been a lot of debate, a lot of research, a lot of discussion on breeding for idiotypes. But in my opinion, as a plant breeder too, whether we have one written down or not, all plant breeders have in your mind a model that you're selecting for, and basically that's what an idiotype is all about. Idiotype, my definition on here anyway, is a conceptual model of a combination of desirable characteristics of the plant that contribute to yield potential. And today my discussion will be centered around the phenotypic traits and not chemical traits and that sort of thing, because we all know that those are important as well, but I'll restrict my discussion this afternoon to the phenotypic traits. Donald's wheat idiotype, when he published this, he said his model would be a short, strong stem, few small, erect leaves, awns, a large ear, an erect ear, and a single comb. So you get the idea that that's what the model that he was proposing to select for in wheat. Some examples of research in other crops, barley, Rasmussen had published some papers on that, and rice, some of the brassicas, coffee, short rotation poplars, and other kind of things. So there's a lot of work and publications been done on that. In most all those cases, what you see too is an idiotype is specific to the set of target environments you're going for. So in Donald's case, his idiotype was for the types of environments he was growing in and not necessarily a universal model type for all environments. And quickly on switchgrass, historically been used as a warm season forage crop, grazing hay, that type of thing. But more recent years, as we know, it's one of those crops, one of the perennial grasses that's been a lot of focus on for biofuels. And under the bioenergy feedstock development program, switchgrass was chosen as a model lignocellulose herbaceous crop. It's a native warm season C4 perennial bunch grass, broadly adapted to the U.S. I didn't put the map up, but if you look at it, very few states that didn't have at least native populations of switchgrass. Produces fairly high yield, up to 12 metric tons per hectare, with moderate, and I put on there moderate inputs of N, P, and K. If you see some of the publication, they talk about switchgrass is for marginal land, and it will grow on marginal lands. But what we have learned, too, you get marginal yields on marginal land. So you do have to have inputs to get production. But switchgrass is one of those that is pretty efficient in utilizing nutrients and doesn't have a high requirement for the nutrients. There are two generally recognized ecotypes, what's referred to as upland and lowland, and what I'm going to be talking about today, all of them are from lowland parents, and so those are the ones that are best adapted to the south and the southeast. Talk about the polycross nursery to start with here. We started out with five parental sources chosen from a larger set, and here I want to acknowledge another colleague, Dr. Janice Zale, did this original work in the greenhouse of trying to identify potential parent sources that we could use in crosses. And from a larger set, we settled on five. One of them is a PI from that was collected out of Arkansas, a PI from Florida, a PI from Texas, and the one from Texas. I can get you. It was a selection from Alamo, and in our region and most of the country for the lowland types, Alamo is the variety that is grown. In fact, in East Tennessee, we have a pilot plant that we have 5,000 acres of Alamo planted that is being used in a pilot plant there. The other two parental lines here is two experimentals from Oklahoma State University. This one still is an experimental. The other one got released as a variety now known as Cimarron. So those are the five parental sources we started with. We chose them based on germination rate and early seedling vigor. And so for us, that's a problem of getting stands established is slow germination and seedling vigor is low. So these were chosen on that basis, and then we germinated plants, picked out 14 single plants from each of the parent sources, transplanted those to a polycross nursery and at the East Tennessee Research and Education Center in Knoxville in 2007. 70 clones total, and so this is a diagram of what that field map would look like, just showing you that these are rows. And so we planted these like you would do a typical polycross nursery where there's random pollinations and you randomize them in such a manner that you get good pollinations of all those parents. And then we chose open pollinated seed harvested from each of the 70 clones in 2008. So they were individually harvested. So from the 14 subfamilies of each of the five stocks, we wound up with 70 half-sib subfamilies then. And this is what the subfamilies looked like in the field once we planted those. Then we planted 10 plants, so we started them in the greenhouse, took 10 plants from each of the 70 subfamilies, and wound up with about 700 clones planted in the field. So these color codes here would be, this would be like one of those Oklahoma experimental numbers, all of those subfamilies, and this red line would divide the field in half there. So all 14 of those clones from the Oklahoma experimental line are from Cimarron or from Texas. That's what those different colors in here indicate. So 700 of those total. And then data collected from each clone in 2010, and we're in the process. In 2011, we have part of the data collected now. And what I want to do is spend just a few minutes extra to show you some of the traits measured, the leaf characteristics. So when I talk about correlations a little bit later, you'll have an idea maybe what a better picture in your mind what we're talking about. The color, we rated the color of the leaves, whether it was a kind of a pale green on a scale of 1 to 5 or almost a blue or real dark green color. And so we would have scores in between. They would, most of them be either 1 or 1.5, 2, 2.5, so forth up to a 5. We also measured the leaf width, and so that was taken of the uppermost fully expanded leaf at the widest point, so the leaf widths. We also scored the bloom, and that's the waxy covering on the leaf, and so those are scored from 1 to 3, where 1 would be a very waxy coating, almost a almost look like a white powder on the leaf in some cases, to a low wax or almost no wax on the leaf surface. We also scored leaf angles from things that are very upright to what we would consider to be a droopy plant type. A 5 would be droopy and 1 is the extremely upright leaves. The stem characteristics we measured was the stem numbers. We actually counted stems on each of the clones that were out there, and then measured stem height. We measured stem height twice during the growing season, first in June. So as a breeder, you wanted some early characteristics that maybe you could select for to give you some idea of what would be the higher yield potentials, and that's what we're looking for, things that are closely associated with yield or correlated with yield. So we did height in June, fairly early in the season, and then in at maturity, right before we harvested them, we took the heights again in about October. We also measured the stem width in centimeters below the first node at the top of the stem coming down, so we had a consistent basis. And these are a couple of different stems. You can see there's quite a variation, and I'll show you some examples of that in a minute. Canopy traits we measured were something that's very dense or real tight together versus a very loose or open canopy. And again, part of that would be physiological based, whether light penetration into the canopy would be an aid or not, versus one that are real close together. You get more shading in a canopy like that, whether that's associated with yield or not. And then the other, we had a fair amount of rust develop on switchgrass, so we went through and did evaluations on rust. We had some other diseases present that we have not specifically identified, but it was easier to identify rust. Unfortunately, you can't see that one very well. But even on those that didn't show a lot of pustules on the leaves, we would have a lot of what looked to be hypersensitive reaction, just small chlorotic, very minor chlorotic spots on the leaves, looked like it had been infested but didn't develop and release spores. And we did disease based on amount of disease. So each clone, we would give it kind of a percent of the clone that had symptoms of disease at different rating times. And we started in June and rated June, July, August, and again in September. So there are four different disease rating at different times. We also gave them a severity of disease from 1 to 9, where 9 would be dead, and I don't recall any cases where we had a dead plant, but that would be the scale. And then we calculated disease index, so it's the amount times the severity to get that product, and so you got a 1 value that you can use as a score. So we use that one basically to use in our correlation matrix then. And, of course, we did biomass yield at the end of the season. And so in this case, we're not looking at forage. We're looking at a one-time cut for biomass yield on these particular clones. Data analysis, we did ANOVA on the family means and then did pairwise correlation of the traits. And so switchgrass, the family means, and this is in 2010, clonal yields and the phenotypic traits from those different ones. So here's the maternal parent, that whole family mean then. And if you look at the yields here, we went from 545 to almost 1,000 grams per clone in this case, and that's the average then. And of those averages, there were about 140 observations, or about 140 individual clones that made up that particular mean. Same with the plant height. You can see there were differences in plant height here. In that first full year, we transplanted in field in 2009 and did measurements in 2010. You'll see the same thing. Stem counts, anywhere from about 45 per clone up to, 57, 56, 57, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I'll show you some data in a minute that the second year, we've got a lot more stems on those, but they're correlated together. Stem size, you can see there are some differences in stem size, but what you'll see in a moment is the means mask variation. So if we just went on the means, we would not have much information about the population, but I'll show you some distribution and the variation here in a moment. Leaf width, the same way, you can see some variation there in the means. Leaf angles, the bloom, you can see with the bloom, the means didn't show much difference there, but the distributions will be different. And so leaf colors and canopy and disease index, you'll see some differences out here. So I'll move quickly to show you some examples. The stem size, here these box and whisker plots give you an example of the range. So this would be the minimum, the maximum value, and this would be the median in here. And so if you look at each of those fives, you can see that there's quite a difference in variation with stem size. You see the same thing with stem number. If you look at plant height, it shows the distribution of those things again, and the biomass yield kind of the same way. Correlations, I just pulled out of the correlation matrix those stem number positively correlated, plant height, stem diameter, leaf angle, disease index, all of those correlated with yield. Disease index is a negative correlation, so more disease, less yield. The rust disease also was correlated negatively with leaf color and leaf bloom, so you maybe could select for some rust resistance based on those particular characteristics. So here's the 10 and 11 numbers and the things I want to show you. They got taller this year. The stem numbers went up considerably, so you can see some of the things are, the means are basically the same from one year to the next, but the other, some of the parameters increase. In summary, based on these results, idiotype for selection among these half-silbs is tall plants that have a high number of large stems with wide leaves that are floppy, blue in color, with high bloom. And then limitations, we acknowledge this is one year of results at one location, F1 generation only, space planted versus sward competition. We know that from other research that's probably some differences there. Future plans create these contrasting populations then.
Thank you. Draft procedure.